Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name's Mark Pacey from the Wired Up Archive. Today we're going through three more stories. Had a request, someone said, can you do a Marine Corps themed show today? I said, yes, I can. I have certainly more than three stories, so I've picked three Marine Corps stories. I think I've read maybe two of these. I'm pretty sure I haven't read the third one. So let's get into it. They livened up the town and stayed for 7 months, but 8 decades later, few knew they had even been here. In 1942, Masterton was a town that did not have many young men left. They were all overseas fighting in the war. When Japan attacked Pearl Harbor the previous December, Masterton and the rest of the country felt very vulnerable. When the news came that the United States Marine Corps would start arriving here to organize themselves and also to recoup after bouts in the Pacific, there was a sense of relief that they would be here should we be attacked by Japan, which at the time was a very real fear. February of 1943, we got our turn when we were chosen to host a battalion of Marines from the 3rd Defense Battalion. They got off the train on February 17 at Solway, made their way into the showgrounds, which had been repurposed as a military camp. The Marines were not particularly impressed with the conditions. They had come from Guadalcanal and were in their summer uniforms. It was a lot colder, so the first thing some of them did was head to town to buy blankets. This group were here for R&R, and they'd spent 6 months on Guadalcanal and most were sick with malaria. As a place to get away from the war, Masterton was a paradise to them. There was fishing and hunting opportunities, as well as the ample supply of milk and steak. After a couple of months, the purpose shifted to training, and it was into the Tararua Range for the Marines. All the while they were here, the war was continuing, and once the men here were fit and reinforced with fresh troops, they would be going back. 7 months after they had arrived, they had to say goodbye to their new friends. They got back on the train, headed to Wellington, and on board ships, and back to the Pacific War. For the families that had adopted these new sons, they would keep in touch via letter. Mastertonians would send them home baking, anything to make their time in the Pacific more comfortable. Unfortunately, not everyone that leaves to war gets to go home at the end of it. For several Masterton families, the letters from their Marines would stop, and they would later be told that their boy hadn't made it. In 1982, 4 decades after the Marines had camped in Masterton, a former Marine, Eugene Henneman, came here for a visit. He went to the Solway Showgrounds to see what remained of his former camp. He was disappointed to see that there was really nothing left from the time that they had been here at all. For anyone coming back, there is nothing to look at, he said. He noted that there was now a memorial garden to the Japanese at Featherston, but nothing in Masterton in the way of a memorial for the Marines. New Zealanders forgetting their friends was how he summed it all up. 8 decades after the Marines had been here, we went from forgetting them to having forgotten them. This was the unfortunate reality until a move was made to revive their memory and ensure that they would never be forgotten again. All right, I'm going to play. So this is, I think today I'm playing mostly all stuff I've played before. Again, I was thinking, Marine Corps music, American music. I played this one a little while ago. It's from a movie that came out last year or the year before called Twisters, which is the sequel to Twister. This is Luke Combs' Ain't No Love in Oklahoma.
Same old devil down the same old dead end highway. Ain't no moving.
Luke Combs, Ain't No Love in Oklahoma. All right. When the Marines came to Macedon, it was not just for R&R. After a period of relaxing, it was soon back into training. When the men of the United States Marine Corps came to Macedon, they were in pretty poor shape. Months of fighting in the islands had taken their toll. They were tired, many had malaria, and they needed time off from the war. But after a period of a few weeks, it was decided by the officers in charge that it was time to start getting their men fit again. They started off with some general physical training. At the beginning of the day, when they all woke up from their tents, the first thing they did was head out for a run. To be more accurate, the first thing they did when they woke up was to light their pot-bellied fire, which was in each tent to keep warm. Because by the time the Marines had settled and recovered from their bouts of malaria and fatigue, it was getting into New Zealand winter. As well as early morning runs, there was also long marches around town. It was common to see columns of men marching out towards Bennett's Hill and along Colombo Road and around the Solway area. For more intensive training, men were taken up into the Tararua Range, sometimes staying over several nights. A group of Marines found out the hard way that camping beside a river is not the best place to set up. During the night, heavy rain fell on the mountains and the river rose and took with it the men's tents, their supplies, and left behind a rather wet and miserable group. Other training for the jungle meant employing New Zealanders to act as the enemy. Armed with blanks and small noisy explosives called thunder flashes, they set up ambushes for the Americans, simulating the kind of scenarios that the Marines would face when they went back into the islands. The conditions were especially difficult, and they had been designed that way. Those leading the exercises called them toughening up operations, and they meant business. Some men who could not keep up and remain with the group were left to fend for themselves overnight, spending a cold, wet night without cover. Even those that did manage to stay together had a hard time lighting fires. With the wood all wet, it was not uncommon a sight to see men huddling around a small, smouldering pile of sticks that provided nothing in the way of warmth. The wildlife in the forest fascinated and excited the Americans, and there were opportunities for them in the time to return and go hunting for pigs and deer, which led to some very interesting confrontations between man and beast. The Marines also had training with their weapons, which they had brought with them. The battalions here were defense battalions and had anti-aircraft guns, which they set up and trained on aircraft that flew overhead, which had taken off from Hood Aerodrome for that purpose. It was meant to be kept quiet, but many locals and children in particular would walk over towards where the camps were and watch with fascination as the big gun barrels swiveled in the dusk, following the planes as they flew overhead. The Americans did get to fire their weapons, and not just at startled wildlife. Towards the end of their stay, the group headed to Riversdale Beach, taking their big guns with them. Over the next couple of weeks, notices appeared in the Times Age warning people to keep away from the area. They didn't want anybody getting shot. The training the Marines went through did them a world of good. It ensured that when they went back to the war in the Pacific, they were fit and familiar with their gear. As difficult as the conditions were, they were made just a bit more tolerable from their stay in Wairarapa. All right. So again, keeping with a theme that I've had going for a couple of months now, I think, because I'm right into the nearly halfway through. So I'm literally in the middle of this project about the prisoner of war camp in Featherston with the Japanese. I am playing more Japanese music from my favorite band from Japan. This is X Japan IV. We'll be right back. you go. So I think it's I dot V dot, so it must be IV, not Roman numeral 4. Probably should check what that actually means, but yeah, so that's IV. So that was on, I want to say, Saw 3 soundtrack, maybe Saw 4. There's been so many of them, but it was one of the Saw movies, and that was on the soundtrack. That was the second song they recorded together after they reunited. But this is not a story to talk about the history of X-Japan, even though that would be awesome to do. We are talking about the Marines today, so we have one more story here for you. In September of 1943, the Marines started to make plans for leaving Masterton and head back overseas. This led to a bit of a problem for the Americans. They'd spent the last 7 months happily spending their money at the local shops and had bought all kinds of gear, which they couldn't take with them. For those that had made friends with Masterton families, it was easy. They would simply give their extra stuff to them. Everything from dinnerware to motorbikes and horses were given away. But those that didn't have those connections, there was only one place you could get rid of that much gear quickly. The Masterton rubbish dump. The tip became a hive of activity, with Marines arriving to dispose of their gear and locals clambering through it to save all the bits they could and taking their treasures home with them. In a time of war when money was short and rationing was in full force, it was a bonanza for the treasure seekers. It wasn't just tents and temporary structures that were built for the Americans when they were camped here. There were two halls built specifically for the Marines, one at Solway Showgrounds and one at Cameron Soldiers Memorial Park. The Memorial Park wasn't finished at the time the Marines were leaving, but the one at Solway was used by the men camped there. After the Marines left, the two sites looked very much like army camps and required to be put back to what they looked like before the war. All the smaller installations were dismantled and removed, but the two halls were too good to be demolished. The hall at Memorial Park was purchased for the use of the new St. Joseph's College, a move headed by Monsignor Moore, who was keen to set up a Christian boys' college. The hall was moved and became a feature of the new school and later Chanel, which was on the same site. Tragedy struck in 1987 when a fire that was thought to be deliberately lit destroyed the hall. The second hall at Solway was seen as a great asset to the showgrounds, and it was purchased by the AMP Society, who wanted to keep it on site and use it as events. It remains there to this day, now known as the Trade Hall, and is one of the few buildings built by the United States Marine Corps that is still standing in the country. Most of the others built around have been destroyed. It seemed at the time that this would be the last reminder of the Marines being in Masterton. And of course, aside from the families descended from the Marines that came back after the war, all that changed in 1992, when there was a nationwide effort to commemorate the 50 years since the Marines first arrived in New Zealand. In Memorial Park, a plaque was unveiled to recognise the site as one of the places the Americans had camped. Nearly three decades would pass before another memorial of sorts would be revealed to our American visitors. When the barracks housing area was being developed, it was decided to name one of the streets Marine Corps Drive. On the side of the barracks where the houses now sit, there was in 1943 70 large tents as well as a vehicle depot. The name is very appropriate and ensures that the wartime tenants of the site will never be forgotten. Of course, that was written before I built that memorial out there, so there's that out there as well. So, yeah, so we've done what we can to keep that memory alive. So I think we've done okay. I don't know what else we can do, really, apart from talk about them on the radio, I suppose. So I'll play one more piece of music for you. This is from one of my favorite movies, from one of my favorite soundtracks, from one of my favorite composers. This is from the Thin Red Line soundtrack by the great Hans Zimmer. This is Beam. haven't cut that short. That's the end of that track. It blends into the next one. So I haven't hacked it off at the end there. That is the end of that piece. If you want to hear the rest of it, by all means, go online and check it out. It's an awesome, awesome soundtrack. That is me done for the day. I'm just looking at the live. I was looking at the live feed before, which I'm sure you could see if you were watching on TV. There's blue stuff in the sky, which is nice after this rather dark and wet weekend that we had. It wasn't too bad. I went and saw The Sheep Detectives again. Excellent movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It was awesome. So, yeah, didn't do much over the weekend. It was very much an indoor one. Didn't do any writing, which I'm sure will shock many people, seeing as though that's sort of been my go-to thing for a while there now. I'll probably talk more about that heading in towards the future. But as I mentioned, the topic is the Featherston Prisoner of War Camp, a definitive book on the whole history of the camp. Hasn't really been done before. There's been quite a bit done about the incident, but not about all the rest of it. Doing research into this, I can sort of see why. There's a lot of stuff to cover. I've been sort of averaging maybe a chapter a week, but this last one I'm working on now is on the incident. I'm about 2.5 weeks, and I'm still not done with it, but this is the one you've got to do right. So I've gone real deep into it. You know, why did things happen? Why did they escalate the way they did? What did each side think? What were their beliefs? All of that. So it's been pretty tough, but I should finish it this week, which will be nice, just to get that story done, because I don't think it was, like I said, it's been written about a lot before. I don't think it's been done super accurately before. It has been written accurately, but I've gone a little bit further, looking at many, many different sources, and I've brought them all together to hopefully try and portray what the whole thing was like from all different perspectives, military, non-military, New Zealand, Japanese, all of it. Put all of the opinions out there, all of the eyewitness accounts out there. You can read it and you can make up your own mind about what you think happened. So it's been difficult. It's about the hardest thing I've ever had to write about, just because of the topic of it. It's a very heavy topic, very sensitive topic, and also the amount of research I had to do was insane. It was a stack of papers, 30 centimetres deep, some of it double-sided, so as you can imagine, there was a lot to go through, but we're nearly there. So hopefully next week I'll be in a better mood and say, yep, I've done that, and I'm moving on to talking about, some of the more fun things, like the fact that they quite often complained that they didn't like oatmeal. At least, I think, 3 times they complained to the COs, like, please, can we have something for breakfast other than oatmeal? We don't like oatmeal. So those are the more positive ones. But you've got to talk about this incident, because everything after that, that's when it became more light, and that's when we actually became basically friends after that, once we, realized who each other was and that a lot of our perceptions were wrong that we've been taught and brought up to believe. So It's going to get more positive moving forward from this, but we've got to cover this one really, really, really well. So I've been taking my time. So that's me done for the day. Look after yourselves again. Say stay warm, stay dry. Check the forecast if you're going to go out. I was going to come to work this morning without my raincoat. I had a look on my phone. We'll see if it's accurate, but I'm taking my raincoat just in case something happens, and it's not fun riding home in the rain. So yes, I said stay warm, stay dry. We'll catch up with you in a week's time. See you then.